Thank you for listening to this podcast brought to you by the Center for Christian Music Studies at Baylor University. This podcast was recorded at the 2011 Alleluia Conference. In this session titled, The Three S's of Children's Choirs, Singing, Self, and Spirituality, Michael Bedford discusses three important aspects of working with children and bringing out the best in them in every way. To learn more about the Alleluia Conference, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.
Three S's of Children's Choirs. Let's look at what these are and why they are. Singing. Okay, that is a no-brainer. The word for singing, they wouldn't be there. So that's important as you're pursuing singing. Self. We need, at a very young age, to have children to feel good about themselves. Did that ring?
Yes.
Sorry. Oh, that's right.
Sorry.
I thought I heard a ring when it fell. They need to learn early that they're worth something. And we can help with that. Their self-esteem is so critical, especially at a young age, that they feel good about what they're doing and that they feel like we appreciate their mistake. So self is critical. It's one of those things that has got to be a part of who we are and what we do every minute we work with children. The third S, spirituality. We are a church. Okay? Schools can't deal with all aspects of spirituality. They might be able to address one or two on certain levels, but they can't talk about a lot of things that we can talk about and deal with in the church. So spirituality has got to be a part of our relationship with children. Prayer, worship, liturgy, all these things we need to teach and we need to live. So these three things are what we're going to focus on during the course of these items that I've listed below. We'll talk about all these individually, and some will relate to one of the above, some will relate to two, some will relate to all three. But there's not any particular order that they're down here for. But by the time we get to the end, we will have addressed three issues at the top. Okay? Number one, children are just little adults and adults are just big kids. That is something that will be on my tombstone. I've said it for years. And the interesting thing is everybody thinks, kids adapt to change really easy. They may not say anything because they, quote, respect you. Or you're the adult and you're saying you're going to do this. Yeah. But they are, we'll get to that in a minute. The point is that children and adults are very similar in more ways than people realize. And one way they're similar is that we all need to be appreciated. We all need to be encouraged, and we all need to realize that we are valuable. And so, you know, that's something that transcends the ages. It doesn't make any difference how old you are. That is something, those things are things you have got to feel. So in many ways, children need to be dealt with as adults are dealt with. In other words, we don't talk down to them. We don't baby them. We just try to be yourself. You know, talk on the child's level verbally. I mean, you know, don't use words they can't understand. But, you know, there's no reason to not talk directly to them, not to be energetic about what we're doing. It's the same thing we do with our adult choir. We want to get them energized and get them going. And we want to do that with children, too. But they react to things much the same way as adults. And we'll talk about some of this a little bit further. Number two, building community. Okay, the church is a family. It's a very special family. And one of my favorite stories happened just recently. I had a bass section leader who is 20 years old. He's was a sophomore at the University of Tulsa, about to be a junior. He's a vocal performance major. And he came to apply for the section leader position. And we talked, and I thought, this guy is really on the ball. I mean, he was mature. The answers he gave me to questions were just absolutely, you know, top drawer. And he was cordial, he was warm, he seemed very genuine. The last thing he told me was, I don't really have a church. I really didn't grow up in church. that automatically, most of the time, sends up a red flag to me. I'm thinking, I'm not sure if it's the person for this job. But we had already talked so much, and he had already said so much, that I thought, do I want to live here? Something was telling me that this, you know, and so I went ahead and hired him. I told my rector later, I said, I had qualms about this, but I told him what happened and how I felt about it. He said, well, he said, let's get out of the way, let the Spirit work, see what happens. Well, he hasn't joined the church. He hasn't been baptized yet, but he loves St. John's Church. He loves the choir. He loves what's going on in the church. He helped me out with Vacation Church School in Clark Camp this year as my assistant. Took the Safeguarding God's Children course, you know, went ahead and did that so he could be prepared to be my second in charge. And at the end of the week, he said, I've never worked with kids before. This was such fun. Please call me for the scene next year. And I thought, yes, we're getting there. This is what community's about. Okay, on his level, he was experiencing community like he never felt before. In fact, he told me later on, it was a different conversation, different day. He said, you know, it's a funny thing, but he said, this is not what I've always thought church was. I thought, yes. And I said, well, what is this? He said, well, it feels like a family. It feels like people really care about you. He said, I never thought, and he said, my experience with church in the past has not been good. But he said, this doesn't feel that way. Yes, we're getting there. He hasn't been confirmed yet. He hasn't been baptized. But the rector keeps saying, yeah, let's just wait. You know. And so that's fine with me because he is an incredible singer. And not only that, but he takes his music home. I mean, if something's coming up, he wants it ahead of time so he can work on it and be ready. And I mean, you just can't beat that kind of maturity and that kind of energy. But that kind of thing is what we're trying to build, you know, in our choirs all the way around. We want them to feel like this is a community, okay? Looking at the whole picture, what is the right age group for your choir? Okay, what is your age group for children?
We're K through third grade for our children's choir.
Okay, is there one above that?
Yeah, youth choir, fourth through eighth grade.
Cool. All right, so K through three. Mm-hmm. What about yours? What is your age group?
We're actually a homeschool choir. Oh. So we're a little different. We've got eight, and we've got some 13 and 14 year olds that are wanting to stay in.
Cool. Wanting to stay?
You're wanting to stay.
Oh, we know. Well, that's neat. And so what are the, what's the youngest age you have?
Eight.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What is your children's choir age?
It's about 10 to 13.
10 to 13. Good. Ours is grades 1 through 3. Okay. There's no set pattern. The old formula used to be K through 2, 3 through 5, 6 through 8, 9 through 12, to try to, you know, just stay with the school year. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is perfectly fine if that fits your demographic. You know, it may not. We have had some strange, you know, we all do that. There are cycle, things come in cycles. We may have a whole bunch of kids one year, one choir, not so many in another. And, you know, all of a sudden we may have 6 kids graduate out of the youth choir, and we may not have 6 kids coming in to fill up, you know, and it's an interesting dynamic. Things change every year. It's a movable feast, I call it. I mean, you know, things shift and we just go with the flow of the work with who we have. And it's one of the interesting dynamics about church because things just don't always stay the same. You know, in school, sometimes you can count on that a little more than not, but that's still in church. And so the way you set your choirs up may depend on how many children you have. You know, if you don't have a bunch of young children, like, you know, if you don't have a lot of four, 5, and 6-year-olds, you may want to have an older age group for your starting junior choir. You know, it may just be given that you're going to begin a little bit later. But, so, the bottom line is, you have to decide for yourself what the right age group is. And if your situation is working, stay with it. You know, nobody else can tell you that you're wrong because, you know, you're experiencing it. And they may have a different way of doing it, but, you know, what works for one may not work for another. B, singers come from all walks of life. I mean, we have rich kids, we have poor kids, we have, hopefully, a different races in our children's choirs. Treat them equally. Okay, they're all the same inside God. Why not in our sight? You know, we're making God's image, so there we are. be, you know, as kind of one as you are to the other, as inclusive as you, what one as you are to the other. They are, again, we're building self-esteem here. This is very important that children feel comfortable and feel part. Because interestingly, it's kind of sad to think about, but the children's choir might be the only place where they feel that way. Maybe they don't sense it at school. Maybe there's something at school that, that you know, doesn't feel right. Maybe there's something at home that doesn't feel right, God forbid, that it happens. You know, we may be the safest haven they have. And so we've got to instill self and support them. And the best, one of the best ways we can do that is to treat them the same, you know, in every way. See, there are varying levels of maturity, even at an early age. Have you had a kindergartner who was sharper and more astute than maybe one of your second graders or third graders? Maybe your third grader is a little, you know, immature, and maybe your kindergartner is just jolly on the spot, focused with you, with eyes on you, and soaking up everything. Have you noticed that there can be a vast level of maturity differences, even in just 2 or 3 years? You have to recognize that. And when you do, it's something we have to work with. You know, it's not a curse or a kiss of death. It's nothing like that. But we work with it a different way. I mean, if there's an immature child, we deal with that child without, you know, calling attention to it, but we give them a little, you know, maybe a special help. But the other one, we really encourage to come along and keep that young energetic person focused and keep them tuned into what we're doing. Building strong self-esteem. One of the ways is to eliminate the word no. I said that in my last presentation. That is one word I simply will not use. I don't even use it with my adults. I don't use it with my youth. I don't use it with my adult partner. It just doesn't come in. We don't say no. That's wrong. We go about something another way. We fix it another way. Okay? Greet the children by name as they come in. Now, this means your rehearsal's got to be set. Everything's got to be out and ready to go because you can't have your attention divided. You know, I stand at the door. Hi, come in.
I'm so sorry.
Grab a handout.
I had to pay your shame down the computer, so I put on my staff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, better do that. We're on number 2 right now. We're looking at E right now. Greeting the children by name as they come in. This is so critical because, you know, there is, I mean, you remember the old Cheers show on TV? You want to go where everybody knows your name? Because it's part of the theme song. It is so true. I mean, when people know your name, they're comfortable. And so one of the best things you can do with a child right away is call it by name. One of the things I try to do before the rehearsal starts, the first rehearsal of the year, is know the names of my kids. And hopefully know put the faces of the names. But by the time that first rehearsal is over, I always make myself go around the room and call them by name. They love that because they said, I'm going to give myself a test right now. I'm going to see how many of your names I know. Then I'm going around and call my name. And you're so-and-so and you're... Don't tell me, I'll get it in a minute. You know, maybe you do, and maybe they do have to tell you. Then you call them by name and you go around and you call the rest of them and you come back and say, and you're so-and-so, I remember this time. You know, then they go, yeah. You know, and so that is crucial. I mean, that is so important that you know who they are and that you greet them in the door. Because, again, it's one of those things that says, I'm ready for you. Hey, everything's set up. Let's come in and have a good time. Let's get busy and let's have fun together. And so even if they come in late, you know, it is so frustrating sometimes to have people come in late to rehearsal. It's occasionally disruptive, but it's just frustrating. You know, you want everybody to be there at the start, because especially if you have some fun planned at the beginning, you want them in on it. And sometimes they simply aren't. And whose fault is it?
But sometimes it's out of control too, if it's traffic or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
There are lots of considerations. You know, if the parents may be late runners as a rule. I have a mother who cannot get anywhere on time. But you're right, and right around Tulsa right now we have more construction than you can shake a stick at. And there are more detours than, you know. And so people are coming in occasionally saying, I'm so sorry, she's late. We got held up at such and such intersection, we couldn't get through. That's life. That's gonna happen. And the best thing you can do is greet the child and say, glad you're here. Come on over. Richard over. You have your snack a little bit later when we go back. Come on over and join us. You know, be sure you're welcoming. Because that child already may feel kind of antagonistic toward whoever made them late. You know, this one girl who comes in chronically late because her mother gets there late. She comes in with a scowl on her face. I can tell she's already had either had words with her mom or would like to. You know. because she comes in just, and I say, well, Catherine, I'm glad to see you. You know, she comes in and sit down, and after a while, then she begins to get into the, you know, but she's not happy. She's not a happy camper that she's late. She wants to be on time. And so it's not always the kid's fault. It's not, as you say, it's not always the adult's fault. It's life. And so cope with it. Don't look at it as something that's going to pull everything down, because it really won't. You know, keep that kid in your heart and greet them as they come in, even if they're late. Okay? C, and we were going to talk about this. Change is harder for children than for adults. This is the reason. Adults have lived through a lot of changes. They may not like them. They may grunt till the cows come home about a change. You know, Episcopalians are good at that. You know, we fuss about change, you know. There's an old rule about how many Episcopalians it takes to change a light bulb. It takes five. It takes one to change it, and the other four to say that how much they like the old one better. Yeah. They don't like change.
That's better than Lutherans.
Tell me about
how many Lutherans does it take to change a light bulb? Change? We don't change.
There you go. Yeah, but basically the same. The change is not easy. I mean, really, when we think about it, sometimes it really isn't easy. It's something. Having to adjust to something new can be hard. But adults have lived through change. They've done it before. They know that it happens, and even if they don't like it, they have done it, and they can do it. A big change may be the first time a child has had to cope with that. And even though they don't say anything, it may be doing things to them inside. It may be really kind of doing a number on their mind and their thinking and all. And so, it's one of the things to keep in mind, you know, when there's changes of any kind coming up, prepare them. You know, when they're going into church, you know, like we were talking about in the earlier session, talk about practicing processing. That is a big change. They've never processed before. They don't, you know, they've seen the big choir do it, but they've never processed. You know, you don't want to tell them, okay, Sunday morning we're going to walk in and sing, you know, and then have them go back to the room and go, where am I supposed to be? How am I going to, you know, this is a hard change. This is something they've never done. So practice it, you know. Get the change ready to happen. You know, anytime you can, prepare them for that change that's coming up. That's the way we do with adults anyway. If we have something coming up down the way that, you know, if we don't tell them about it, they're going to be upset. Then we start educating them. And we start saying, this is what's going to happen. This is why we're trying it. And if it doesn't work, we're not going to do it anymore. But let's give it a shot. And very often, that's all it takes. But get them ready. You know, don't just throw a change at a child and assume they're going to take it because they respect you. You're the adult. And you say we're going to do it, so we're going to do it. There's more to it than that. We can't rely on that. That's not what relationships are about. You know, it's a dictatorship. And we don't want that. Okay? So change. Deal with change effectively and ahead of time. Be sure that you're taking care of those things as they come up. Number four, tradition is huge. One of the things that kids love to do, especially kids that have been in the choir, is think about what they did last year and the fact that somebody's going to come again this year. You know, and they get these things in their minds and they look forward to it. I'll talk a little bit about ours and then I want to hear about some of yours. Okay, A, the Christmas Eve tableau. At the 4:30 Christmas Eve service, the children sing and the youth sing. And all the kids that are not in the choir during the gospel lesson will form a tableau up around the manger. The gospel lesson is read. There's a hymn, a carol sung by the choirs. Another part of the gospel is read. There's another carol. There are four carols in all that are interspersed into the gospel reading. And while the children are singing, these other kids come up and take their places around the manger. And what makes this special for the children is that everybody who wants to, gets a solo. It may not be more than two lines of a hymn, but they get to sing along. And we have a microphone set up, and they come up in groups, you know, whichever kids are going to be singing in this carol will come up and line up in order. And each sing, and pass the microphone, the next one sings. And I'm right there below them, right where they are with the piano. So I'm there to cue them and to smile at them. But they love. I mean, you'd be surprised. And if you don't think the parents love to hear their kids do a song, I never thought he could do that. I would have been, oh, I can't believe he actually did that. You mean he told you he wanted to? I can't believe that. You know, and then what happens on Christmas Eve at the service? The place is packed. You know, the word gets out that the kids are going to sing solos. And all of a sudden their families have just got to be there. And I'll tell you what, our Christmas Eve service at 4:30 is our most attended service of the entire year. Yes, Easter is well attended, but not like that 4:30 service. There is standing room only in that service. Even we put out extra chairs, and there's still people standing back. You know, people, that's just, it's a draw. And it's not just Christmas Eve, because our other Christmas Eve services aren't as well attended as that one. But the children getting, that's a big tradition. And it's something they love, because we get together the day before, we practice it, we go through it in the room with the microphone, and then Christmas Eve we do it, and it's just, it's wonderful. Just great fun. It feels like organized chaos. Yeah, that's what Christmas Eve is in church, you know. But it all, you know, God is glorified. So there you are. B, the end of the year musical or the Christmas musical, whenever you want to do one. I look at that. We do the end of the year because we are busy with the Christmas thing. We want to work this as well as we can. So we don't do a Christmas musical. Nothing wrong with it if you do. Go right ahead. At the end of the year, though, I like that because, as I mentioned earlier, it's what I call the carrot at the end of the stick. We're working all year long on hymns and anthems for worship, and that is our focus. By all means, worship is what we're about. But to keep the kids kind of interested, we have that carrot at the end of the stick. At the end of the year, we're going to do this musical, and we're going to be working on it all year. So be sure you come to rehearsal, because next week we may assign parts. You know, keep them interested, keep them going with that. And the end of the year musical is just a kick. I mean, they love it, they look forward to it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, dinners and parties. Okay, dinners for the kids, I don't know. Parties, yes, by all means. We have an end of the year party. All it consists of is we go out on the church playground. And we spend the rehearsal time out there. And parents, I assign parents, they bring the food and the drinks and the favors and the napkins and the cups and all that kind of stuff. And that's where we end our year. We have just sung our last time, maybe the day before, so we come finally at the end of the year and have a party out along. If it's raining, we go inside and have the choir and play music bingo. You know, we just do something that's fun, but we have a party. And, you know, when we think of the fact that we're a community, you know, what do communities do? They get together and they share food and they share fellowship and they do all these things. Kids are the same, you know, they're just young adults. They're just little adults, so they will respond the same way adults do. They will love it. And I can remember a kid coming in the first day of choir one year, what day is our choir party going to do? This was September. I said, well, it's up next year. Huh? I said, end of the year? Next year? Oh, yeah. You know, the last thing you remember about choir was the party. So they come back wondering when the party's going to be. Yeah, you can have a Christmas party. Why not? You know, if the kids are ready to sing, have 15 minutes at the end of your last rehearsal where you have a party. Okay, cool. You know, that's great. What are some of the things you do for tradition? What are some things your choirs do every year that the kids look forward to?
We've done a beginning of the year kickoff party, kind of an informational night for parents, but we'll have pizza and drinks and just kind of fun, just kind of catch up with everybody. How was your summer? What did you do? What was your, I love just finding out what their vacation was.
Right.
They love telling it.
You know, you bet.
Then we do a Christmas party, and then an end of the year party. Those are our big ones that we do. Mm-hmm. The kids just love it.
Oh, yeah. And they'll talk about it way ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. What about the rest of them? Any of you have traditions in your church that your kids do? Special service in kind? That's pretty common. I mean, the parties are withers, you know, and they get you doing things with the kids other than music. And I always think that's kind of cool if you get to interact, you know, on other levels. Music is what we're there for. But there's more to, you know, as much as we don't think about it so much, there's more to a relationship than music. You know, music's important, but there's more to that relationship. And so the parties are kind of a time when you can relax with kids. You might get out and play with them. You know, throw a frisbee with somebody or toss a ball with somebody or get out and do something. Anyway, the tradition is big. Try to establish traditions. If you don't have any major ones with your children's choir, try to set one or two things up that is going to come back every year and be a part of your plan, because that gets into their systems, and that's part of the PR thing overall. I mean, when the kids talk to other kids about this thing, or parents say they do the neatest thing, you should, you know, have the kid come, because they at Christmas time they do this really neat thing where the kids sing solos. And so, you know, word gets around about these traditions. And that can be a major draw for getting kids in when they hear about these things. Okay? Number five, if parents don't get it, no one else will. Okay? You need to be on board with those parents from the very get-go, you know, well before the choir year begins. I have already hit parents up. In April and May, I was hitting parents up that had kindergartners moving into first grade. Because I want to get those kids in the choir before they get off into everything else they've got going, you know. And so I've been talking to parents all along. I've got about 8 or 9 parents. Besides the kids I had last year, I have that many more parents I've talked to so far. And every time I see him at church, I said, I really want to see Blake at first rehearsal. He'll be there. He's looking forward to it, you know. But the parents have got to be your ticket to the children. I mean, the children may be excited about it. They may want to do it, but if the parent isn't tuned in, forget it. You know, they're the ones that are responsible for what the kid does, and so, you know, they call the shots. So be sure they call the right shot. You know, be sure that they know what you're about and that you're interested in them, and you stay in touch with them. It's not the kind of thing we start making phone calls in August, like I said before. It's too late by then. They've already got their year lined up. Yes.
Do you have an informational meeting at the beginning of the year with parents?
Yes, especially, yeah, especially when we have a whole bunch of new kids coming in. We have a lot of new kids this year, so I'm going to start with a time where we invite the parents and kids to come. Like he said, start the year with some sort of little gathering. And it's a great way to kick off, because then everybody sees the room, they see each other, the parents get to know who's doing what. And it's a good, you know, it's more information than you realize. I mean, it's not just what we're doing, but it's what we're about. And so, yeah, I think it's a wonderful
thing. And so what, do you have with that name? Do you have any kind of guidelines about, like a problem we have every year is when we're having our children's musical, someone who has a major part doesn't come to the last dress rehearsal or something like that. Because they have a birthday party or they have something else. We were talking this next year, we were talking about having a meeting with the parents and the kids if they want to try out to establish that guideline. That if you're going to take a major part, you can't throw off the other children by not being there.
Right, right.
So do you think that's a good idea, or are we...
I don't think it's a bad idea at all. I think it has to do with how you approach it. I mean, you know, there's the dogmatic approach, which is this is how it is. You know, if they're not there, they can't do it, and we simply will not make it. You know, that comes across as a very negative thing. But if you go about it from the standpoint of, you know, we have a musical coming up at the end of the year, and we're going to spend all year on it, but when time gets closer, we're going to need a rehearsal. We're going to need an extra rehearsal. And so if you all think in terms of saving such and such a day, the Saturday before, something like that, look at that and see if you can keep that open, because it's really critical that we have the kids one time together before we do it. And please try to, you know, the problem is birthday parties often take a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they, you know, and I'll be honest, that's hard to find. You know? And I have been known to make exceptions. If the kid is ready, I've been known to sort of turn my head. Because there's some battles that are worth fighting, and you get to the end of the year and you have that problem. If that kid can't make it, who's going to do it? They may have been there all along. And this is something else we do in the chancel choir. If they've been to every rehearsal but can't make the rehearsal of the orchestra, I often don't make a big fuss. Because it's not like they have missed a lot of rehearsals and still won't sing. And still can't make the orchestra rehearsal. I mean, that is a different story. But if they've been cunning and they get to the end and something gets in the way, I'm not going to fuss too much about that. I mean, if that kid is ready to go, you know, then I'm willing to bend a little bit.
Usually they're not.
Well,
I mean, if they think that a birthday party is more important than a very last dress rehearsal, they're usually not.
That's what Armstrong talked about yesterday, that, you know, today, nowadays, you don't get that commitment from kids and parents like, you know, we had when we were growing up.
That's true.
And so, you know, he was talking about how you have to lay out those ground rules. You have to say, these are the expectations we expect of you. And he was talking about rehearsal, that, you know, we expect you to be at rehearsal as much as possible. If you're not, let us know. Yeah. So I think having a meeting like that with parents and saying, these are the expectations, you know, this is, you know, give them as much information as you possibly can and say, these are the dates, these are the times, this is what we're doing, And then, you know, you really give that to them and say,
let me take this call from an unexpected something about my car. I'm sorry to interrupt. Oh, it just went off.
If you say, you know, if for whatever reason, you know something's not going to work in your schedule, let us know as early as possible. So that way, you're kind of working with that.
That's,
I think that's really the most important thing.
That does eliminate the problem, but it does tell what the expectations are. And it's all I think.
A big part of it too is it's saying to the parents, we're a team. We're working together. It's not, this is what I'm demanding of you.
Right.
But this is the expectation. There are things that are going to come up, whether it's practices, whether it's birthday parties, whether it's vacations, whether it's whatever.
Yeah.
You know, but you're saying, okay, hey, I'm open to working with you. And I think that goes a long
way. Yeah, that's a positive way of saying it. And yet putting a spin on the fact that what we're doing is important.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say it's etched in stone. If they're not here, they can't do it. That's a little negative, but I think this approach is good. Because it does get your expectations out there. And yet there are some things that just can't be avoided, right in front of you. You know?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden there's a death. Families have to draw their kids somewhere. That is different, but at the same time, you've got a problem. And kids gone and they had a major part. You know. So, you know, we always have to cope with these little things as they come up, and that's what keeps us humble, you know, is having to deal with little problems. And you know, there's not always a pat answer. It'd be nice if we could dictate and just know that that's how it's gonna be. But you know, we do the best we can, and I think that's a great approach. I think Anton's right on target in that. To lay out the rules and say, let's work together and try as much as we can to make this work. Because that does kind of put it back in the parents' court.
And especially if they haven't been inquired, they haven't been... Yeah,
that's another story.
You know, they don't realize it. They think, oh, well, they're just missing this rehearsal. They don't realize that it's not just them that's going to pay the price.
That's right.
All the other children are not going to be able to get the cues.
Right.
Because you can read I can read the part.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting out front.
Yeah.
And it's not really the same as the child rehearsing or going off.
Well, and another thing, here's another instance. One year I had a little boy that I really wanted to be in the youth choir because, of course, he didn't come, he didn't come. Every time I talked to his parents, oh, we're going to get in there. Never showed up. He calls me 2 days before Christmas Eve and says, I can sing a solo if you want me to on Christmas Eve. And I said, well, Will, I know you can. I said, you have a beautiful voice. But I said, oh, we've already assigned those solos in rehearsal, we have everything covered. And I said, if you had been there, I would have given you what I promised. And I said, maybe next year. He said, well, I could do it. I know such and such. I said, I need you. But I said, you know, part of what we're dealing with here is that all of these children have been at rehearsal. And I said, we took a lot of time to get this ready. And I said, I would love to have you do it, but I need for you to be with us before we do. So they sat in the congregation and watched, you know. That sends the wrong message to the other kids.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody's gone that much, I mean, he didn't come at all, then suddenly want to be a part of the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that speaks volumes, and other kids are going to want, you know, he gets to do that. I don't have to come to rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he gets a big part. No big deal, you know.
Or it builds up envy.
Yes.
Or jealousy.
Oh, that too.
You know, then, well, gee, this must be his
right.
favorite, because
right.
he let him do this.
And it also doesn't teach children life skills, that you have to be a dependable person. To,
right.
You can't just fly in.
Yeah,
and
got to be responsible. Commitment is commitment. I know people who have kids and adults sign contracts.
Mm-hmm.
There are some children's choir directors who do that.
I've been considering it for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not really. I'm looking at calling it a covenant as opposed to
sure.
a commitment. But
that's a much better.
Just
word.
Kind of a you know.
Yeah.
This is. You know, like 4 points of, you know, we plan, we commit
yeah.
to being at rehearsal, we commit to being on the Sundays we sing. If we can't,
yeah.
we'll let Craig know as soon as possible,
right.
you know, if
yeah.
something comes up.
Yeah, in a church covenant is much better word than a contract.
Yeah.
Works better, it's more biblical. Call it anything like that. Call it a statement of commitment. Call it anything you want. It's something that's worded nicely and yet has some significance. And so, yeah, I think Pam was telling me that she does that with her kids. And if the parents sign it, the kids sign it, and then if something happens, they say, well, what about the, you know, you all told me that, you know. And of course, it's not a legal thing, but it's something that a step is taken to say, this is important. And so it's not binding, but it is something that may put a different spin on it when all is said and done. So that's not a bad way of approaching it. So work with your parents carefully, you know, trying to get this understanding to them. And like you say, I think, you know, what he does at the beginning of the year is always a great way to kick off, because it gets everybody on the same page together. Number six, hard work can be fun and there is no substitute for it. Okay? Your enthusiasm and positive attitude will rub off. If you're enthusiastic and positive, it may not seem like work. You know, but you're getting things out of those kids. And when I talk about planning your work and working your plan, I might set aside 15 minutes to work on Sunday's anthem that they're getting ready to sing. What if you're going long in that 15 minutes and they're just going gangbusters? And they are so excited and there's still some things you could show them. Are you going to stop because your 15 minutes is up? I wouldn't. I'd stretch it out a little longer, go 20 minutes. You know, get your new idea in there and then, you know, work your plan so you take something else out at the end and then promise them that you'll put it back next week. And keep your promise. Because they'll remember, you promised us last week. Yeah, they'll remember that. So the thing is, that you need to work hard. And if work is going well, you don't want to cut it off. I mean, if something is really working, you want to kind of really keep building it. Because the end result is that much better when you do it. You can't do it alone, okay? Don't ever take on a children's choir and decide you're going to be the be-all, you know. It's kind of a nice thing to think about. We keep thinking about, well, if I do it all, I don't have to communicate with anybody else. You know, I don't want to do it, and I can take care of it, and I can do this, and I can do it. Well, first thing you know, you've got 100 responsibilities that you can't quite take care of them all as much as you want to. Parents and volunteers can help. Youth choir kids have come in to help. If we're working on a couple of two-part things, and wants a strong voice to help lead. I may bring a couple of youth choir girls in to sing with these kids, so that parents can help you with all kinds of things. They can help you with your SNAP program if you want to do that and don't have to worry about providing things every week. They can help with that. They'd be glad to put it on rotations. You know, make it effective. I mean, make it business-like. Show them that this is how we're doing. This is the lineup, and here's where you are. And a statement at the end of that roster that says, if you're unable to fulfill your requirement, please call one of the seven people. So put it in their ballpark to take care of the snack. And because if there's not a snack, you know, and the kids are, you know, then eventually something's going to happen and everybody's going to figure out what went wrong. You know? But normally that doesn't happen. I mean, most of the time when these parents say they're going to do these things, they go, send them an email tonight. You know, on Friday, you know, next Monday, I have you down to bring snacks. And they'll often respond and say, I'm there, you know. And that's cool. But just, you know, we need reminders. Our lives are too busy. And if they forget, sometimes it's not their fault. I mean, it helps to just give them a little reminder. But don't count on yourself to do everything. You know, I have a lady that is in charge of all the mowing for every choir. She takes care of it all. And before we sing in church, she comes in and fits the children with robes. And before we start the year with our youth choir, she comes in and fits the youth robes. We make sure that, of course, you know, they're changing all the time. You know, I have boys that were in one robe in May, and they come back in September, and they've grown this much. So, got to take care of it. You know, they don't want their robe coming over here. You know, and so she's there to handle it. I don't have time to do that. I can't get all these kids in the robes. She'll come, and she'll say, is it all right if I just take one out at a time? I said, you take it. You know, that's fine. So we'll rehearse, and she'll just call on one child at a time and come in, and she'll fit them. And it's a beautiful arrangement because I don't have to worry about it. And then she comes on Sunday morning to be sure they're vested. And she loves. I mean, it's amazing what some people love in the way of volunteerism and what they consider their job. You know, and she is crazy about it. She loves the kids, she loves the adults, and she loves taking care of them. She'll take care of the folders, the music, everything. So, you know, these have people that will help you out with your program. If you have something you need doing, delegate it. You know, we have problems sometimes when we just try to take on too much. We've got enough to worry about with planning the rehearsal. If there are other things going on, delegate something. You know, if there's transportation to be arranged, if the kids are going to go sing somewhere, delegate that to an adult or to a staff person. You know, can we borrow the van? Could you possibly set that up for us? You know, this type of thing. But don't try to do everything by yourselves. It gets to you after a while, and there's burnout that comes in real quick when you're the only one that can do everything and it doesn't get done. Okay? 8, it's kind of like the old real estate, location, location, location. This is communication, communication, communication. There can't be too much. It's just not possible. You cannot tell people too many times or remind them too many times about something. They may say, oh, that again. That's okay. I'd rather them say that than, oh, I didn't know about it. Oh, I didn't hear about it. You know, that's terrible. So, you know, the thing is, we know everything that's going on. We've planned it. We know what it's like. We feel like everybody else does too sometimes. But it's not the case. I mean, we've got to tell them. We've got to get it out there however we can, however many ways we can. We've got to communicate with the parents, with the clergy, with the congregation, with the kids. There's a lot of communication that goes on. And it's up to us to do it because we're the ones in charge. And so, you know, you cannot do too much in the way of letting people know what's happening. I try to keep my emails to parents short. Because, you know, I have people that I see their name on the email and I think, oh. Because you open it up, it can't fit on the screen. And you scroll down and they're still boring. Some people just love to write long emails. And, you know, once in a while that's okay, but, you know, if you see a person's name, you think, do I have time to read this email? Then you save it and you don't get around to it. But anytime you're communicating as short as possible, because they don't need a whole lot of stuff, they just need some basic communication. So try to keep the things you send out down to a small amount, because people don't have time to do a lot of reading sometimes, and they often won't. If they don't have time, then they set it aside and forget about it. Then you haven't communicated. So keep it short, but get it there. Get it there. Okay? 9, some children will never sing in a choir. And that's okay. You know, you may go after a child and really want them in there. And, you know, I had a child tell me very calmly and very comfortably one day, Dr. Bedford, I just don't think singing's for me. I just don't like it. I just don't enjoy it. Well, okay, you could argue, well, have you tried it? You know. But, you know, sometimes I'm almost prone to say, well, if you want, keep it in mind. And I may talk to you later and see if you still feel the same way. If you didn't, that's fine. But let's kind of don't close the door on it. Okay. You know, and they're good with that. I have had, even better, I've had a child try it and say, yeah. I had a youth choir guy once in another church, bless his heart. I talked him into singing. I said, give it a shot for a month. It doesn't work like that. He came every single Sunday, sang every time he sang. At the end of the month, he said, I really don't like this. I said, okay. I said, you tried it. You know, he said, this just isn't for me. I don't feel like I am doing it. You know, I'm just not. And, you know, that's not exactly a slap in your face. I mean, what people are looking for, you know, we're not all things to all people. We have to understand that. We, you know, as much as we would like to be, you know, we can't be everything to everybody. And so he had other interests. But bless his heart, he gave a shot. You know, he did what I asked him to. And that's a good selling point sometimes, even with a child. You want to talk to the parent, have them try for a month. And if they don't like it, then they don't have to do it. And sometimes that's kind of cool because there's a way out. You know, it's not a standard commitment for the year, and if they get in there, they might like it. But if they don't, they give it a shot. And sometimes that is a really, really neat thing. But you're going to find out that sometimes there will come a child who's, you know, is going to tell you at some point, I just really don't like to sing. That's not my thing. And I have a boy who quit a choir after he'd been in there for 2 years because he was really sports oriented. And I mean, he could give you any statistic of any sport, of any player, of any team. You just ask him, he can tell you. And that was his interest. And that was okay. He sang for a while. But then he quit. Well, I'm not going to go back and beg you to come back. You know, he gave it a shot, and he told me later on what his interests were. And, you know, we need to live with that. But so the thing is trying to remind ourselves that it's all right if we don't get every kid in the church in the you know, that would be a wonderful thing, have every kid in there, but it's just not everybody's thing. And so don't beat yourself over the head if you can't pull all the kids in. Do what you can and make it, for the ones that come, make it a great experience. Because that word of mouth is important, and that kind of thing does get out. But you're never going to get everybody. And so that's one thing we have to just remember. Trust your instincts. You may have some very solid instincts about certain things. You know, you may feel very strongly that such and such just may not work, you know, or this is not a good idea at this time. Even if, you know, if somebody's coming at you saying, why don't you try something? Why don't we do such and such and so and so? You know, somewhat often there are a lot of people out there who are idea people. I mean, and that's a good thing. That's a positive thing. I have a lady who's in PR work. One of my parents, she's a PR person. That's what she does for a living. She's always offering suggestions. She's never saying, you know, let's do this. She's saying, have you thought about it? Or have you tried? What about such and such? You know, and sometimes that's a good thing. But I'll look at some things that she suggests and I'll realize why it's not going to work. And I'll email her back and I said, thank you for the suggestion. I think maybe we'll put this off for now because, but we might look at it later. You know, or something like that. Something that's not going to just put her off, but to clarify why I feel like it's not a good thing. You're the children's choir person. You're the musician. You're the one dealing with children. You're the one that kind of has a sense of what is going to work and what's not. So it's interesting. There are people all around who are willing to tell you how to do your job. You know, and some of them can do it, some can't. And really not many people know what you do and why you do it. There's not a lot of people other than other children's choir majors who know what you're about and what your business is. But I welcome suggestions. And I always tell her, I said, you know, I love your ideas, keep them coming. Because that doesn't close the door and say, you know, I don't want to hear from you anymore. She interestingly sent me an email a long ago and said, wouldn't it be a neat idea of such and such and so and so? My girls couldn't participate because they're doing such and such, but I wondered if that's a good idea. And I'm going, you know, I didn't tell her this, but I thought, if your girls aren't going to do it, you know, how many other kids aren't going to do it too? I mean, is this really a good idea? You know, just because it sounds good, you know, you know, she spoke volumes when she said that. You know, my girls are going to be busy doing such and such, but I wonder if it'd be a good idea for other kids. Well, you know, if it's not for yours, you know, it's an interesting thing. And so I emailed her back and I said, thank you for this suggestion. I think that I may think about this some more first because I'm going to need to get my head around it if we do it. And I'm not sure we can, but let me think about it. And so it's not a put-off, but it is saying we're going to show this for the moment and look at it later. And so, you know, she is pushy. But she's pushing in a good way. I mean, her ideas are not bad sometimes, and that's how she thinks in her business. You know, she really does come up with great ideas for her company. And so that's how she works. And, you know, so, and every once in a while, she will hit me with something that is wonderful. So I don't want to close that communication off with her. But trust your instincts to make the decision. Ask a few people for advice. Yes, if something comes up that sounds good, talk to your rector or your pastor, your preacher, whoever, and see what they think about it. Do you think this would work for us right now? You know, would you have any idea? Go to the Christian ed person. Would this encroach on what you're doing if we were to, you know? One of the things that this parent suggested, she said, have you ever thought of a mission trip for the choir to go and sing places? Yes, I had, except that the youth choir, the youth department already does mission trips. So what I emailed her back and told her was, I don't want to do this as a separate thing because I don't want to encroach on Paula's thing. She's already got this wonderful thing going. Maybe we can consider piggybacking off of it and taking the choir kids along with the other kids. But I said, we can't do it this year. That mission trip is already set up and we're not ready. But let's think about it for another time. And, you know, some good ideas come, but they're just not ready. And you've got to use your instinct to know that. You know, you're the buck stops with you. And that's okay. Your instincts are often very, very good. You're called to serve. Look for guidance. Read, think, pray, journal, and listen to your inner feelings. Okay? Do all this stuff, and you will make the right decision. Yeah. Number 11, choirs love to sing. This seems like a no-brainer to let them. Okay? What I'm trying to say is here, look at your rehearsal and examine how much singing is going on and how much talking is going on. Is there a lot more talking than singing? You know, are you expounding a lot more than they're actually getting a chance to sing? It's all important, But there's got to be kind of a balance, and there's got to be plenty of time for singing. That's what they're there for. That's what they want to do. You can, you know, teach them all day long, but I think you kind of have to, you structure your teaching so that it doesn't take away from the time that, that they really need to be doing the singing. So kind of look at that as you're doing your rehearsal. You might even want to sometime either videotape or audio tape your rehearsal and listen to it and see how it worked. See what happened. You may not really be aware when you finish rehearsal of what happened, but if you go back and look at it or listen to it, you might be surprised at how much talking you did and how little they did and how little singing you did. You know? So you may want to explore it that way and just see what is going on in your rehearsal, because we really can't always tell. We're there, yes, but we're there in a different perspective. We're looking at it differently. So it might be interesting to see what we do and whether it's working. Okay? When learning happens, everybody wins. Okay? This is what we're all about. It doesn't make any difference what we're teaching. It doesn't make any difference what is going on. If the teaching happens and we see it happen, you know, that is one of the most gratifying things in the world, to see a child go, oh yeah. You know, first time light bulb, you know, wow. And that, you know, that will send me home on a cloud if something like that happens. If a child reacts to something, I say, oh, yeah, that is so cool. You know, and they will sometimes. I mean, they haven't thought of something. You've given them something brand new to think about. And everybody wins. You win. They win. Everybody. It's a wonderful thing. So teaching is important. We are teachers, among other things. We have got to keep teaching. And so we've got to be sure that we keep that going. That doesn't always mean a lot of talking, but it does mean, you know, interaction and so on and so forth. But everybody wins when that happens. It's just one of those things. Okay? Number 13, try not to get too involved in the numbers game. Okay? I don't know, for a long time people measured success by the number of people who were doing it. And on some levels that is true. For example, look at this conference. I mean, what, we have 250 people come? What a wonderful thing. I mean, that's a great number. Okay? Should we have shot for 500? Are we unsuccessful because only 250 showed up? I don't think so. There are lots of reasons why a certain number is really good. 250 is a great number for something like this because people can still interact with each other and still feel like a community. They go into the same room and be in the same room together and worship, or they can be in a session together and just interact with each other one-on-one. There's a lot of time and a lot of opportunities for that to happen. With a larger group, that doesn't happen. Okay, that's one instance. Your choir is the same way. You know, if you don't get, but, you know, one lady was saying this morning in the other session, I may not get more than five singers. She started a new choir. I said, five is great. I had five one year myself, and I worked them like 450. We worked, and we sang, and we learned, and we did everything with it because I wanted to keep those five coming. Next year was going to be a chance to add to it, but this was what we had this year. Go with it, you know. Don't worry about the numbers. If it's, and I told my rector, I said, look at our demographic right now. I said, grades 1 through 3, we don't have that many kids. I said, we've got a whole passel of kindergartners that are coming up, about 8 or 10 kindergartners who are going to be ready for choir next year. He said, great. He said, just, you know, he said, I'll leave that with you. Just make it work. And it has. I mean, all year long, those five kids kept right on coming. Kept right on singing. And so, and his son was one of them. And so consequently, he and his wife at different times were both in rehearsal because of our Safeguarding God's Children plan. The parents have got to come and help out occasionally, and so they came along with several of the other parents. And that's what's kind of cool about this Safe Church or Safeguarding God's Children. It's more than protection of the children. It's giving some other people a chance to see what you're doing. There's a lot of people, a lot of parents who would not see your rehearsal, not know a thing about what was going on. And it's amazing how many parents come in and see that and say, this is really cool. I'm so glad they're here. You know, that warms my heart. Because they go and then talk to their friends and tell them, you know, you need to get your kid here. You know, that is a wonderful thing. So numbers are not critical. I mean, yeah, it'd be great to have a choir of 25 or 30 kids. And maybe you will. Maybe you do. But sometimes that number is not going to be the same. Things change in the church cycle. You know, demographics shift, and we may have a whole influx of little kids coming up, but in this group right now, we just don't have that many. Work with it. You know, it'll change. You know, God will take care of all of it. You know, you do what you can and let God handle the rest of it. Seeds sprout, enthusiasm spreads, and choirs grow. That's what this is all about. The seeds sprouting have to do with kind of starting with what you have and, you know, letting it take root and then building on it. Being enthusiastic about the fight in God. These kids are great. And letting them sing in church. And our acoustics are so wonderful that our little five can be heard in the background. They're not overseeing, but our room helps, you know. And so people are always surprised that they can hear the kids when there's that few of them. But that shows that we're working, you know. And so the enthusiasm spreads, and when that happens, and they're successful in worship with a small number, that they may grow. You know, even in the framework of a year, that may change. There may be some kids added. Because their parents saw that, oh, that would be so beautiful. My kid, they sound so good. That would be cool. So that kind of thing sometimes takes care of itself. But enthusiasm is the key to that, from you and from everybody else. Okay? The last point I want to make, and I have it in bold print, kids know. They may not be able to verbalize, but they know fake when they see it. They know real when they see it. They know anger when they see it. They know joy when they see it. Don't try to play games with them. The best thing you can be is be honest, be open. If there's a question, if there's a child has a complaint, which doesn't happen often, but you never know. You know, we have adults who verbalize a complaint in a heartbeat. Okay, deal with it. You know, explain very carefully why we need to do this. I mean, very often the child will accept reason, possibly a little better than the adult. Adult already has a built-in concept of why they think something ought to be a certain way. And if you're not going to change it, then they're still sort of, you know. But if a child listens to your reasoning and you have a reason for it, you know, that's so much better than just saying, we're doing it this way because I said so. I mean, that's an old concept that I don't think exists much anymore. But I know that it used to. Because I had a friend in school that I grew up with whose mother would say it all the time. Why do I have to? Because I told you to. You know? I mean, that was then, this is now. You know, things are different, and kids can sense that. And I tell you what, if you reason with them, and if you talk to them gently, that's kind of respect. You know, you're not forcing it on them, but you're explaining, and you're trying to help them understand, and you're treating them like a person. And so being honest and being respectful is absolutely critical to your relationship. Children, all the children, every single one of them. And they'll know when it isn't working. They really will. If you are fake or if you are pretending to be, you know, a certain way and you're not, they can feel that. They really can't. They can't tell it in words, but they can sense it. And so be as real with them as you can. Be yourself because you're a great person. You know, share that.
Thank you again for listening to this podcast. To learn more about the Alleluia Conference, visit us online at www.baylor.edu/alleluia.